This will just take a second. Ping, ping, ping.
Welcome to Geek Brunch Retrocast. We are the A-Team. We're bringing you the A-Team of retro everything.
Yeah. What was the key phrase he used to say? I love it when a mission... What does he say? I love it when a plan comes together.
When a plan comes together, yeah.
I have to find a pen for my notes.
Ah.
Gotta be prepared. It's not like DC Noise, where we have no show notes.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a little. You used to have show notes on DC Noise.
Yeah. I will on the next one. It'll say Convergence.
Yeah. Is that, was that more of a
DC Noise
weekly kind of?
Yeah.
Whatever you were calling it. Yeah.
Specials or whatever.
Yeah. Was that just you and Daryl?
And Bill.
Zanowitz. Oh, Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, Zano. Okay, cool. Look forward to it.
I'm almost through week two already. I only have 3 books left to read, and I'm halfway through one of them.
Yeah, it seemed like you jumped on those right away.
Yeah.
As you got them.
But you know what my top books were? Like, you know how I rank the books every week, what I read?
Right.
My top ones were the ones I read for this one. at least 2 of them.
The true retro instead of the ones calling back to it. Well, that's cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting my shipment because I just do the monthly. And I didn't get a lot of them, but I'm really excited about the ones I got. And
I think you'll like them. Because the Flashpoint, pre-Flashpoint books, which was week one, really did feel like we were just there because it hasn't been that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm reading the pre-Zero Hour, and I'd say 80% of the books really feel like they're 90s books. Do you know what I mean? They feel like that time period.
Yeah, not just the characters, but the...
Right, right. So that's kind of retro. And I think the editors, like some of the editors, I've been looking at the editors lately because I'm like, man, they're doing a really good job of what week one books I think should be and what these various characters are doing and the time period they're capturing pretty well. And I think the editors did a good job. And I think they're like editors that don't normally edit the books. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It might be the bullpen or something. I mean, the interns, I don't know. These are editors' names that I don't usually see. They're not the big editors anyway. And I think they're doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, just like with the the rest of the creative teams, they
Yeah.
had to
They
pull out
assembled, yeah.
people.
Well, I just read the Wheezy one, and it really did feel like 90s steel, like Louise Simpson, Simonson.
Right.
It felt like that time period, and the artist almost looked like the art back then, even though it was a different artist.
Yeah, I
Looked
think a
like
lot of the ones.
Bogdanov or whatever his name was. I can't pronounce his name. Especially the layouts. Like, there's an opening fight sequence, and I'm like, man, I just read some old steel, and this looks like it. It was pretty cool. Yeah, it's taking me back. It's good stuff. I'm loving it. I see a lot of people shitting on it, but I do my best to try to avoid it. And rather than get in a conversation with them, I just rather just avoid it, you know?
Yeah, I guess I have been avoiding it without trying, or maybe I just haven't been looking, but I haven't seen too much negativity. But I just anymore, I don't even really, unless it's kind of gotten to the same way that I am with movie previews, where if I know I'm going to see a movie, no
Yeah.
matter what, I don't bother looking at previews, or I don't need to, you know, and I treat previews like a sample if I'm not sure if I want to see a movie.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I'm sort of getting that way with comic books, that
sometimes you
maybe
don't
if I
have a
read something
sometimes
that's,
you don't have a choice if you go to a movie. Like, if you actually go to the theater, you're
yeah,
gonna see previews regardless.
that's the time I do see them exactly.
Yeah. You can
But
avoid
anyway.
the trailers.
Yeah.
I
So,
kind of felt that way, but I felt inclined to watch the latest trailers. And I was happy with both of
Well, I did watch the Star Wars one, because sometimes I will watch the teaser trailers because I know they're not going to show you a whole ton of
Yeah,
stuff.
Star Wars does a really good job of just showing clips that will make you excited. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to know shit about the plot. All you have to know is, God damn, I love these characters and this universe. And that's the Falcon flying through this thing, right? It's
Yeah.
awesome as shit.
They're giving you
And
some visuals that will
yeah.
excite you to see the visuals, but not, they're not giving you this beat by beat story.
I never could ever figure out why Lucas never continued, because it's like they were such a big hit. Like, right after Return of the Jedi, there was a long lull. Do you know what I mean? And you usually you just keep the tires rolling until you flop. Do you know what I mean? Or run out of ideas, or you really want to end it. And I guess that's what he felt like, is he thought his story was over, and let others tell it.
Yeah, it could be
Because
part of that.
all he did is go back and do how I got there. Do you know what I mean? And
It could be part of
I'm not a
that.
fan of prequels. I sometimes they're really well done. I mean, sometimes I really do dig prequels, but other times I'm just like, well, you already know how you got there, so it's kind of like you're spoiled already. But sometimes they're really well done. There's been a couple of prequels that I've seen that I've really enjoyed.
I think also, though, when you have a property that's owned by one person, as it was previously,
Yeah.
then he has tons of money. He can do other projects, other things that he's interested in. You know, he doesn't have to keep, if he didn't feel like it or wasn't interested in telling that story, he didn't have to rush, and he had all the money and that he could possibly want. So it wasn't like he was needing to do it to put food on the table either. But now that it's owned by a huge corporation, they're gonna keep their properties running. And you know, if they want to do a new movie and the person that directed the last one doesn't feel like it anymore, then they'll just find somebody else to do it, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing with like with Marvel and DC Comics at this point. You know, they're gonna if Batman was just owned by a dude, or a lady, like if it was just owned by a single person, then they could easily say, you know, I got a shitload of money. I don't really need any more money right now. I'm not really into Batman, so I'm not gonna write any Batman stories for 20 years, and we just wouldn't have any Batman stories.
Right.
But it's owned by a
It
huge
must be
company, so.
nice though too to have that luxury
Oh,
to,
sure.
yeah, like just to say
I
fuck
mean,
it. I don't need money. Like I don't need it. I did what I did. I made the money that I needed to make. And 'cause I think his latest animated musical was a pretty flop. I thought it was at the theater one day, but when you have the luxury to do that when you don't like he, I think he started off well with like American Graffiti. Like I love that movie. And then when he went to Star Wars, like I was just blown away. And I was of the age when I don't know, like that just captured my imagination so much, and everything else was just, it wasn't even like you couldn't even compare to it. Do you know what I mean? It was like how do you compare to something like Star Trek couldn't compare to it at the time. Now I've become more of a Star Trek fan, but and then Buck Rogers, yeah, we can talk about that. There was some lame ass special effects in this last one, man. It looked like something that I had on the Commodore 64. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I don't think the show has the money it used to, or the budget it did in the first season.
Yeah. It was enjoyable though. There was I wasn't I had to actually, for some reason my DVD my Blu-ray player wouldn't play it. Like the one that I have hooked to the TV, it was just skip. And I look at the back of the DVD and it looks fine. And I went back to play the two previous episodes and they worked just fine. So I was like, I'm gonna try my laptop, and yeah, I had to watch it on my laptop because I couldn't watch it on my DVD player. It was weird.
That is weird. Yeah, I can get past bad special effects if the story is okay, or even if it's funny or something like that. There's some
Yeah,
other value
yeah.
to it. I'm not one of those that needs. I can appreciate good special effects and good action scenes and stuff, but I can get past that if there's other things about the story that are the episode that are appealing.
Everything in Star Wars, though, just looks so authentic. And Empire Strikes Back, and then I remember when Return of the Jedi came, and you're in that scene in Jabba's tavern, and I looked at those characters that were in the band, and I was like, God damn, that looks like the Muppets. You know, I was like, it looked like something I'd see on Jim Henson's Muppet Hour. And I
All
was like,
right.
that just looks weird. It didn't look like an alien that it didn't have the same authenticity that the other aliens did. And I don't know why, but that always stood out when I saw it. Now it doesn't bother me, like on seeing it again and again and again. But I remember when I first saw Return of the Jedi, that stood out to me.
Yeah, I don't remember having a reaction to them, but I know what you mean.
Because I was comparing, my young mind was comparing the cantina scene with what was in Jabba's tavern. I almost said Java. I write code in Java. I don't, but no, Jabba.
Or Java's Cavern. I think that's where you get a latte on Tatooine.
That's right, a latte.
The other kind of Java. Yeah, I guess should we go into Buck Rogers then?
Yeah, let's
We
do
started
that.
already kind of talking about it. It was called Golden Man, and it came out first, originally on February 19th of 1981.
And one thing I want to point out is one of the actors we had come back and play a villain in this one too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he was
I
the
missed
guy.
that.
He was the actor that could phase through the walls in the first season. You know, that was going after Buck, and he was wearing that all black costume, and he had the mask, and he would like phase in. He was like the Vision.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was the actor that played the lead guy in the penal colony.
Okay.
It's the
Yeah, the
same
one that
guy.
had the real kind of bony face.
Yeah, that was
Yeah.
him. So yeah, I
Gotcha.
thought that was cool. There's some repeat actor in here playing a different role, just like we saw with Sid Haig.
Yeah, I missed that, but yeah, that's cool. Also noticeably absent from this episode, Twiggy, not even appear once.
That I didn't even notice, but I thought he had one. I thought he had one line at the beginning. 'Cause are
Did
you
he?
sure he didn't appear?
I thought so, but
Because I heard his voice that me and Barb played it, and I was like, God damn, they still don't have Mel Blanc playing the voice.
Maybe because it didn't cross my mind till after I watched the episode. I wasn't actually looking for him, so
I think he had just
it's possible.
one scene, and he said something, and he had that dumbass voice again. By the way, I'm gonna send you Hal Jordan, and 'cause I don't think you have him, and I have a dupe of Hal Jordan. And what was the other one you didn't have? You had Harlequin,
I do have her, yeah.
Hal Jordan, and damn it, I can't think of the other one. I have a dupe of. Oh, Power Girl. You don't have
Oh,
Power
nice.
Girl, right?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you, sir. So this episode starts off where the searcher comes across a life pod, and there is what looks like a kid in there. He's got golden skin, pretty much golden everything. I mean, his hair is golden, his outfit is golden, and he's speaking of his hair, he's kind of got a Beatles mop top.
Yeah.
And he's talking about somebody else that was with him that's missing, a guy named Relkos. And meanwhile, the search ends up drifting into an asteroid storm. And the searcher, pretty much, you get a wide shot of the searcher and the asteroid, and the asteroid, or the searcher, pretty much sticks it in the asteroid.
What kind of pilot just flew it right into the asteroid? He's like,
Yeah.
okay, that guy's gonna lose his job. And some like construction beam falls from the ship onto the admiral.
Yeah.
It doesn't even look like it's part of the ship. It looks like some kind of support beams from the top of the roof made out of wood that just randomly falls on the admiral.
Yeah, it wasn't too convincing.
It was fun though.
Yeah, and but the whole reason that happens plot wise is so that the golden boy can display his power, being able to alter the density of objects, of materials, so that Buck and some other guys are able to lift it off of the Admiral. And so now we know that they have this, that he has this power, but it's relative to his size. Because he's small, he can't affect larger objects. And
I really like the concept that, like, what you find out towards the end that we'll talk about.
yeah, it's
The
interesting.
concept of their abilities is really, really interesting. I really dug that. It's cool. What do they call them? Transelementals? Like, this is like Element Lad from the Legion of Superheroes. You know,
Yeah, I guess it would be kind of like that.
that's what their abilities are. They
Mm-hmm.
can like change things.
Right. Yeah, it would be kind of like
Like a
alchemy.
Firestorm too. He can
Mm-hmm.
change things as long as it's organic.
Yeah, it would
Or
be kind
not,
of
yeah, non-organic.
non-organic. Yeah, so it would be kind of like that, like a an like an alchemy. And so as it turns out, the companion of this golden boy, Relkos, the one that's missing, they get a distress signal from the nearby planet, and the searcher tries to pull out of the asteroid and is stuck.
By turning
So
their tractor beams inverted, they invert their tractor beams.
yeah. So the Golden Boy tells them, "Why don't you go rescue my companion, because he's bigger than me, and so he might be able to actually affect your something as large as your ship."
Did when you first watched the beginning of it, Chris, did you think that he was gonna be like a bad guy, like the Golden Boy? 'Cause I did. I thought it was gonna be like some evil Golden Boy. I had never seen this before, by the way. This is the first time I've seen this. I didn't think he. I thought he was gonna lead them on to an adventure and get him screw him over. That wasn't the case.
If I did, it was right at the very beginning when he first appeared, before he really got a sense of the way he was acting. But and once I think once you saw it's from this point, they transition to the planet that turns out to be a penal colony, and you see the Golden Man, and once you learn a little bit about him, it didn't seem like they were really up to anything, because the Golden Man seems to you figure out pretty quickly on that he seems to be what it at least appears to be, is that he seems like he's simple,
Yeah.
that he's might be have like a mental handicap, and he's pretty much trapped on this penal colony, but it largely amounts to a planet of hicks. And he's
But the,
getting
but there there's one black guy in that well, there's a couple of them, but there's one guy that actor when they have the lynch mob. And he really stands out. I don't know if you noticed him, but he almost looked like he was in a sitcom or something. Like he was overacting compared to everybody else. Like
Oh, really?
a thousand times. Like me and Barb were like watching it over and over again because I was like, look at this one guy. And he's like laughing the whole time. Like he's got this big smile and he's got the pitchfork and he's like doing a dance with it. Like he's like moving up and down with it, up and down with it. I was like,
Weird.
it was great. He was like one of my highlights of the show. Because I had to go back and watch it a couple times. I was like, man, that's awesome. Because he was really into that role. Like he was like a, what do they call him, extra?
Yeah.
But he was really doing his job.
That's funny. I think I just probably didn't notice him because there was so much else going on. There were
Yeah,
definitely.
he stands out though because there's a lot of them. You know, there's like at least 35 of them in this like lynch mob, right?
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of Frankenstein because you know how they'd always go after Frankenstein's monster.
Right.
It's kind of like that. They were even kind of dressed like that, like kind of like from that time period. And yeah, it was a crazy scene. If you have just a If you feel like just laughing, just watch this guy. You'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, there are definitely other stuff to laugh at, because, like I said, the crowd that's after him. It's funny that you mention Frankenstein, by the way, and mobs chasing him, because that'll relate to a comic I'm going to talk about later. But because they're all they figure out they put him in a cage. One guy, then the lead of the pack, is taking sort of ownership for finding him and stuff. So they put him in this cage, and they take this other guy out of the cage first. You don't really know what the deal with him is, but he must have just pissed this guy off earlier or something.
See, I didn't notice there was anybody in the cage. That's
Oh, really?
interesting.
Yeah,
Yeah, I didn't.
there's some old dude that looked real tired that was in the cage that he just took him out and pushed him away. Like, okay, your time in the cage is done. But so they put the Golden Man in the cage, and somehow they figure out that he has the power. I think 'cause they're just messing with him and
Oh,
sticking a pitchfork or something in at him.
they're poking him with stuff, and
Right.
he's turning it, and then even some woman brings like a ladle, and he like turns it to silver.
Yeah, she's actually credited as Hag,
Skag from Popeye.
as a hag, in the credits, and which I thought was kind of funny because she does feature a couple times in the episode, but they're cracking me up because they're screaming at the Golden Man. She kept saying, "Touch it, Golden Man, touch it,
Touch it.
touch it." And that was making me laugh. But and the other thing that about this scene that was distracting me was that, they call it ADR, where after you record something, the sound isn't right or something. So then they go back in post-production, and the actor records lines, and then they add that audio to the video. And so the ADR, there's a way of doing that so it seems like the audio is matching the video, and they did not do that well in this scene at all. The ADR, something away about the way they mix the audio, you could tell it really wasn't a part of the scene, so it just sounded like somebody doing a commentary track. And so, but there, and that was the audio through this whole scene. It was supposed to be the sound of the crowd, all the people just saying random stuff. But it really stood out to me as not being mixed right to make it sound right. So that's kind of funny.
I might have skipped that part because what I did is once I switched from the TV to the laptop, I kind of jumped to like a certain scene. I think I might have missed that.
Well, it was just, yeah, through that whole scene where the crowd was chasing the Golden Man and messing with them throughout
Yeah.
that whole thing.
Before the cage or after the cage?
Both
Because
before and after.
he did turn the cage to like glass and then broke his way out, and then
Yeah.
they went chasing him.
Yeah, when they're chasing him as well. May have been more so
And he
but I think
does
it was
find
before
like
and after.
a barn hand who kind of bonds with him, like helps him.
Yeah. And he offers him food, but I
Yeah.
wrote in my notes "food?" question mark because
It looked like a bowl of shit. That's what it looked
it looked
like.
like a bullshit, and yeah, it looked nasty. If they were just trying to make it look authentic to what somebody on a farm would eat in terms of just being sort of gruel or something in their minds, but yeah, it did not look appetizing, and it just made it all the more funny that the Golden Man was so excited about eating it.
Yeah. Well, I think
But
he was excited. Once you learn what the Golden Man really is, it explains why he's that, like
yeah, he had a friend,
has
and
that. Yeah, it's
that is one of the things that's
his reactions are really weird.
right.
It's kind of like of Mice and Men when you had Lenny and whatever, and that one guy was just a little slow
Yeah.
and naive. That's the type of thing I thought the Golden Man was, but it's not that.
Me too, yeah. And I think you're sort of meant to think that, but also kind of be wondering what the deal is. And so while he's escaped, Buck and the Golden Boy head down to the penal colony to try to find him, and they end up getting trapped by the prisoners, and put in a cell. They try to be covert, but they're unsuccessful, and so they get trapped. They had this funny sequence where they come up with a trick to escape their cell, where the Golden Boy takes a couple little rocks or something like that and makes and transforms them into jewels, and then they leave them out just a little bit too far from a hand reaching through the bars to reach, and then pretend to be sleeping and wait for their jailer to come back and look at it and try to reach in for it, and then Buck grabs his hand.
This is after they beat the shit out of Buck a couple times, right?
Yeah, I guess he has at
And
that point.
they also, this is when they escaped with the jewel, but before that, they took the kid out of the cage to try to make the ship that they were trying to escape in lighter. And you learn that this is a penal colony. Is that how you say it?
Penal colony, yeah.
Every time I hear that word, I think of a colony of penises, but
Well, that
but I
says
know it's
more.
like a prison colony.
Yeah, that says more about you than the planet, I think.
But the kid can't transform it. He's like, I'm too small, I can't do it. But if you find my friend, he'll be able to make the ship lighter, and you'll be able to get off of here. So they throw him back in the cage. They beat up Buck another couple times, and then he like. I thought this was funny because Buck is acting like he's been had the shit kicked out of him, but he has like he just got dirt on him. Like there's like no blood or anything, and the kid gets this bucket of water and just puts it on his forehead, and he goes ah, like it stings, but there's no cut. There's no cut. So how is this stinging? And why would a bucket of water help you clean a bruise? You know what I mean? If
Yeah, it was magical penal colony dirt
dirt,
that was
yeah.
acidic.
I like the way Buck and the kid work together, though. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and Hawk ends up when they haven't heard from Buck and the Golden Boy on the ship for a while. Hawk goes down to find out what happened, and he definitely reminded me of Spock in this
Yeah, with the
situation.
robe, yeah.
'Cause yeah, whenever they'd go to on Star Trek, whenever they go to a planet that is a primitive culture, or where they haven't seen Vulcans before, Spock ends up wearing a robe. Yeah, the
The Jedi robe.
Jedi robe to cover his ears.
I am liking Hawk. The one thing I can say for this season is I like his character. I dig him.
Yeah, I don't mind him at all. I was thinking that during the episode too, that was the one thing that I kept hearing before we started the season, is that they added this character that's a bird man, and it sounded really weird and strange and for the series to do that, but of the new characters, I don't mind him at all. I think he's kind of an interesting addition. It's cool for Buck to have a buddy.
Yeah, because Twiggy's gone now.
Yeah, basically. Although next episode is the X episode where the original voice comes back,
Oh,
I
cool.
guess, I think.
I wonder if they'll explain it or if it just like.
Yeah. Or if the doctor, or I finally fixed his programming.
Yeah.
loaded the correct audio file.
Have all this cool technology and they can't get the audio right.
So Hawk pretends to be an authority figure, and starts ripping into the penal colony and the choices that they made, the reason that they lock up Buck and the Golden Boy in the first place is because Buck has a weapon and weapons are outlawed. But Hawk's whole approach that he takes is that you're the prisoners, you're not the ones that are here to enforce the rules. And that's what he uses to try to get them to show him the prisoners. But meanwhile, Buck and the Golden Boy have escaped, and Buck's carrying the golden boy around in a sack over his back. And Hawk, there's a pretty brief sequence. They don't draw it out for very long, where Hawk is following them, and he's got his cloak on, so they just know somebody's following him, and they don't know that it's Hawk, but they don't really draw that out. It's pretty,
'Cause the boy could see through the bag.
yeah.
That's pretty awesome. He's like, "Buck, there's somebody following us." And
Yeah, it's like having eyes in the back of your
yeah.
head.
So Buck is like, "I'll lead him into this alleyway and then kick his ass."
That's your future self-defense tip is next time you're in a dangerous city, find a little kid and put him in a sack.
Sack.
Carry him around on your back so he can tell you if somebody's following you.
So that's where they team up and they know they need to get off the island while all the people are chasing them. And they have one scene where there's this another hag that's up there. He thinks he sees his partner, and there's another golden boy in the window, and they go up to the window and there's this woman and she's painting a dude gold.
It's the
That
same
was like
woman.
great. Yeah, it's the
It's
same
the same
hag.
hag, yeah.
She
I think that's why she had a name, because she had two parts.
wanted to make people think that this guy was a golden boy too,
Yeah, it
that
was like
she
her
had him.
son or something. She was
Yeah.
calling him Alfie. And he has no freaking clue what's going on. Alfie doesn't. He's just standing there shirtless, getting painted gold, and he's like, "Huh? What's going on? Why are these people here?"
Is she the same lady though when they leave that area and she's like their watchtower that's saying, "There they are, there they are."
Yeah, I think it's her too. Yeah, that she's up on the balcony pointing them out and stuff, but she always said, "Golden man, golden man, touch it, golden man, touch it."
You know you want it, touch it. There's not too many women in that penal colony. Were there any others besides her?
I don't know. If they were, they were just
I didn't.
extras in the
If they
crowd.
were, I didn't notice them. She was the only woman I noticed.
Yeah. It's no Orange is the New Black or anything there.
Yeah.
No, not a woman's prison, just a hag and some men. But
And she's
so
so bad looking that nobody
yeah.
wants to touch her.
Right. So I didn't have to worry about putting her there. Really the last thing that happens is that Hawk is found out. They end up finding out that Hawk is a Birdman,
Sorry.
and they're pretty much just going to have to make a run for it. But they end up getting back to the. Now that they've got the Golden Man, they just pretty much just go back to the ship, and the only thing that's left to resolve is getting the searcher out of the asteroid.
Yeah, which then they finally do that 'cause the kid has way more powers than the little boy. And one of the things Buck pulls the golden boy aside and he's like, "Why do you talk to this like adult like he is? You know, what's his story?"
Yeah,
And
so what's the deal? I'm wondering if is Buck getting worried at this point, is there kind of a weird situation going on here between these two?
He's like, "What is the story?" And I was surprised to hear that the older golden man was his son, and they like reverse age. So it's like the other thing that's interesting is when you're young, just like when you get old, you might start, you know, your joints stop working, and you might lose your eyesight and your hearing, and they lose their powers, or it starts to dwindle as they get older, but they start off big and they get small and they turn into a child. So it's like inverted of what we know of aging.
Yeah, so the Golden Man's actually the Golden Boy's 5-year-old son.
Yeah.
And the only thing I didn't explain, I was kind of wondering afterwards, is if their life cycles are reversed, what about birth? Like, where do they come from? Because
Yeah.
you can't, I mean, there's no
If
way
you
that they're giving.
if you're a kids, yeah, you'd be little t two kids screwing and have a big child, and that thing would come out of your. Wow.
Yeah, just I don't know how they, if they're, maybe they're not born that way, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they are
Hatched from eggs or something.
hatched in some huge ass egg, but where does that, like, what does the egg come out of, you know? I just, like,
Yeah.
it didn't quite make sense when I thought about it, but it's an interesting reveal. And the funniest thing, one of the funniest things in the episode is that I guess to show his youth, Welkos says, "I bet you can't do this," and he does this weird thing with his hands where,
His fingers.
yeah, with this, where like he puts his hands together and he has one finger going up top and one go finger going down below. I've seen people do it before, and I don't know how to do it, and I don't know if I'm describing it well, but it's just this funny thing you can do with your hands, and it was totally a type of thing a kid would do.
Yeah.
Like, you meet a stranger and you're psyched about this weird thing you can do with your hands, so.
And then he really starts to act like a kid as they're leaving. I don't wanna go.
Yeah.
Can I stay? And the golden boy is like, get in there before I put you to bed and spank you if you don't start acting up. That's pretty
Yeah, that was pretty funny, and that's the episode ends with all of them, all the crew of the searcher cracking up. And other than that, it was pretty much just about Aaron Gray's legs,
Yeah.
like the previous episodes. That's always a subplot.
She has lost. She used to be really interesting though to me. And in this season, she's just there.
Yeah, the character on the show,
The
yeah.
only time they made her good and interesting was the episode where she had that fling with that one guy, you know, that ambassador from the other world. And he
Right.
was much older looking than her. That was the only time they really used her like as a legitimate character. Other than that, she's just on the ship flying shit.
Yeah, she was a little bit more, she had a little more. Like this episode, she particularly was did not do much at all. The Silurian episode last time, at least she was around in more scenes because it pretty much all took place on the ship.
Yeah.
But yeah, her role's been reduced, and she's less interesting. I mean, which is not good, but.
So this was called Golden Man, so I could put it in the notes.
Yeah, Golden Man. Which is funny because.
It should be called Golden Boy.
Yeah. But then, I don't know, maybe. I guess you would still think that that they were referring to the.
Irony of the situation, yeah.
Or they were still referring to. Like, I was just wondering. At first, I was thinking, oh, maybe that would give the surprise away. But if you were watching it, you probably would just think the episode was named after the little one. But yeah, it was pretty good. Oh, so the Golden Man thing was funny to me because just a few episodes of from Kid to Flash ago, it covered Flash 173, and that has the character that it's his only appearance ever, and he was called the Golden Man. And since listening to that episode, New Mutant has been bringing up that term Golden Man, because I think thought it was funny the way I described the Golden Man's in that story. His outfit is pretty much, Tyrak from Legion of
Yeah,
Superheroes,
yeah.
that really weird outfit that he wears.
Yeah, very 70s Luke Cage-ish looking.
Yeah, and there's really
Except
not
his
much
is
to it.
white. His is white and he's got like a banana thong. His legs are all showing.
Yeah, it's like a Speedo attack attached to a top
Yeah,
that is
attached to a top that has a huge V in it, you
huge
know, like that.
V-neck, yeah. And that's the exact costume that the Golden Man wears in Flash 173. So I was describing it and talking about Tyrak and stuff. So we were going back and forth, and I told him that I heard he was working on Tyrak cosplay. So, and then here we are with another Golden Man.
Yeah, I don't have that issue, 173. That's a pretty cool cover.
Yeah, I got
Once
the.
there were three flashes, then there were two flashes, then there was one, and then there was none.
Yep. Yeah, it's a good cover, and it's cool that it's the first, it's actually the first meeting of Jake Garrick and Wally West, which is, that's cool. The plot of the story itself and with the Golden Man and stuff is not all that, not super interesting, but yeah, it was just kind of funny to have multiple Golden Mans going on in my life.
Oh, you have a nice Kid Flash cover, a Joe Kubert Flash cover coming up in 189 with Kid Flash.
Yes, yeah, that will be actually, I have a bunch of Teen Titans issues to cover, but the next actual issue of the Flash that he appeared in was that one. And I do actually have not in very good condition, but I do actually have a copy of that issue, or 173. I actually was able to get on Comixology.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, I have every one of them since 1973, and then everything
nice.
beyond that is sporadic, you know. I
Yeah.
have little pockets of them, and I don't have a lot of them, but I have a couple of old ones, like 122, which is the first appearance of the Top. I
Nice.
have two copies of 117. But one doesn't, one of them has, it's like a beautiful copy, but it's got the cover sliced in half. Like they sent it back, kind of thing. Yeah. I'd sure like to get Captain Cold's first. But man, these are, we're talking expensive books.
Yeah, some of them, when you get back to the very early issues of the Silver Age Flash, even in 2.0 condition, they're not cheap. Or, the lower quality conditions are not cheap.
Yeah. 135 would be cool. I wouldn't mind getting that with the Kid Flash first appearance.
Yeah, me neither, but
And the Heat Wave, I would love to have that one too. Matter of fact, that's that 140 goes back to the TV show 'cause they have that. Are you caught up on the Flash?
No, the I just watched I think I just watched the one where they introduced Golden Glider.
Oh, but did you see the one where Captain Cold and Heat Wave go after Flash
Yeah.
and they cross the beams?
Yeah, they cross the
Well,
streams.
cover 140 is so that.
Nice.
It has Heat Wave and Captain Cold like freezing him. One side's freezing him, the other side's burning him.
Nice.
Yeah, God, these are great covers. Fuck, I want them all. Damn it.
So that was, it was definitely a decent episode of Buck Rogers. It wasn't terrible. It was amusing. I mean, at times it was amusing unintentionally, but I didn't mind it.
There was one episode, 2 episodes ago that I really didn't like, but other than that, they've kept my attention. Do you know what I mean? That
Yeah, that
one
was
was brutal.
the one that we spent about 5 minutes on episode 50. Neither of us was too crazy about, but
Some really interesting concepts in here. Some really bad special effects. They have a scene where Buck and the Golden Boy fly to the planet in a shuttle, and the shuttle looks like it looks like a graphic from Zaxxon, if you've ever played that game.
Sounds familiar.
Oh God, I love that game. I had it for the ColecoVision, and I used to play it at the arcade, and If I ever go to my brother's and the he has the ColecoVision at his house, I'd like to play that game again because I used to love that thing. It had a it was like a 3D landscape, so you could always see the shadow of your ship, you know, and it would always vary depending on the height that you were at. But yeah, it was a good game.
Nice. Do we end up with any
We
questions?
had one from Kyle on
Okay.
Twitter. Let me see if I can find it. I've been tweeting a lot lately, so I think this one is right at the top. Yeah, Kyle Pettit just says, "What series you've been wanting to read for a long time but haven't gotten to it yet?"
That's a good question.
I have to think about it. I think early Doctor Strange stuff is what I'd like to read, is the Bronze Age stuff. I'm more interested in the Bronze Age stuff more than the Silver Age stuff. And I'd like to read a lot more of Werewolf by Night, because I dig that. And then the thing that you're covering that I want to dig into, which I don't have the comics for, but I have all three omnibuses, is Tomb of Dracula. So I'd say like the Bronze Age monster stuff. I'd like to get into at some point. I've read some Werewolf by Night for this show, but those are just random issues.
Yeah, one of the first things that came to mind was, and I was trying to think of something maybe that I've known of and for longer than this, but one of the first things that came to mind was Power of Shazam. Because I think I even talked about it on the show a few years ago. I read the hardcover that Jerry Ordway did that led to that series.
Yeah, the mini.
But yeah, and I loved it. And I think I would really love the series, but I haven't gotten around. I have some of the issues, but I haven't gotten around to collecting them and finishing that off and reading it. That was one of the first ones that came to my mind, but I was trying to think of one maybe that I've just wanted to read for forever or something. I haven't come up with yet, but
That one I'd like to read too. I read most of it, but I stopped getting Power of Shazam towards the very end. And those are books that I am trying to. I've been getting Golden Age Shazam, so like the Marvel family and Captain Marvel, the Adventures of Captain Marvel, and all those stuff when I can get them. And I think I cleared the comic shop of everything they had, Golden Age. But I do want to complete my Shazam run. Oh wow, we got the doves coming back. We have these doves that have babies in our backyard and inside the fence, and it's the first time I've seen it this year in the spring. But what was I talking about? Oh, the Shazam doves. I'm like that cartoon character, squirrel. I get so easily distracted, but I that's like one of the things I want to. There's two things I want to complete: is my first series Shazam run from DC Comics, not the Fawcett, but the. I'll never complete the Fawcett. It's just too expensive and too old stuff. But I'm missing, like, I don't know. I'd say 15 books from the first series, and then I'm probably missing another 15 from Power of Shazam. And I want to target those books before they go up in price because of the movie in like 2019 or whatever it's targeted for.
Good call.
Yeah, just I want to get them now because I want to have them. I don't want to like sell them. I just want to have them. And now they're Power of Shazam is really affordable. But because The Rock is playing Black Adam, a lot of the Black Adam appearances have gone up.
Yeah, I didn't even really think about that till now.
That's a good one. Yeah, I like that
So,
question. There's probably a lot more. Those are the ones that I could think of.
yeah, I'm sure after this or later today or something, I think other ones will come to my mind.
The one that I own that I haven't read yet, but I want to read is American Flag, because I like Howard Chaykin, and that's like what he's kind of known for. Like, I've been reading a lot of Howard Chaykin, but I haven't read that, and that would be a good one to read for, as an indie, I think.
Yeah, that definitely. I definitely think you can count stuff that you own that you just haven't gotten around to reading. I mean, that might even count more.
Yeah.
because you actually have it physically and just.
There's a lot of stuff I'd like to reread too.
Yeah. Well, I guess what sort of fits is, I mean, I have started reading it lately, though how far. Because I've been reading the Silver Age Marvel stuff sort of in order. Not reading everything, but reading a lot of the stuff. And one of the things in that I really wanted to read was more of the Fantastic Four, the early Fantastic Four, the Lee Kirby run, because I had started and read the first few issues several times, but never got. I wanted to get deeper into it to maybe the second half, as I've heard many people, including Chris Campbell, talk about that second half of that run, how amazing it is, and so I've wanted to get to it. But I mean, I am on my way now. But I'm not reading it by itself. So, but I'm. So I'm only, I think, on issue maybe 23 or something, or 24 Fantastic Four at this point. But hopefully I'll keep going to get to that later Kirby Lee stuff.
Did you read any this time?
I didn't. I was going to talk about some Tales of Suspense later,
Oh, okay.
but I have read. Since the last episode, or I have read some more Fantastic Four. I've been
Okay.
reading. I'm trying to think what I haven't been reading. I think I've been reading most of the stuff that they're publishing at that time because there wasn't that many books.
Are you
But
trying to read it in order or no?
yeah, kind of in publishing order, kind
Yeah.
of. I haven't been reading the X-Men, although I've only gotten to where the first couple issues of it was published. But I've read those before, and I've also listened to the issues talked about on podcasts and stuff. So I'm skipping those, and I haven't been reading a lot of the Strange Tales with the Human Torch or the Tales to Astonish with Ant-Man. But I've been reading mostly everything else. But it's
Tales
been
to Astonish and Tales of Suspense. What was which one was Suspense? Was that the Cap, Iron Man Cap?
Iron Man, yeah, and then it ends up with Cap, and then there's Journey into Mystery, which is Thor, and
Yeah.
I'm almost at the point where they made the names of the characters bigger than the name of the comic, because it would be like Journey into Mystery featuring Thor, and then pretty soon I'm at the point where it's Journey into Mystery featuring Thor,
Yeah.
and they did that pretty much across the line before they ended up just giving the characters their own books. But yeah, it's been interesting sort of seeing the young universe take shape and see the characters start to appear in others' books and reading the different characters before Avengers number one and then seeing them all there in Avengers number one. It's been kind of a fun reading experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you want to start off, or do you want me to start off?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I could talk about the Tales of Suspense I was going to read. That would sort of make sense, I guess.
Okay, sure.
It would make for an appropriate segue, I suppose. Yeah, I was going to talk in varying detail about Tales of Suspense 48, 49, and 50. Because I thought it was kind of interesting and typical of these early Iron Man stories. Some of them are really solid. The origin story, the very first Iron Man story is really good. And then some issues, if almost like they had the hardest time out of all the characters coming up with good antagonists for Iron Man. Some of his early foes are just completely lame, and it's no surprise that they didn't have further appearances. But, and you know, I mean, Thor had some like that too, but all of them did. But really, at that time, the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man were getting the good villains that were going to last. Then the first one that Iron Man gets that seems to have promise, and you know, I do have the benefit of hindsight knowing that the character did last, is when you get the first Crimson Dynamo. But so these 48 is an example kind of that lamer antagonist in the story by Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, and Dick Ayers called The New Iron Man Battles the Mysterious Mr. Dahl. I mean, the cool thing about this issue is that it's the first one where he doesn't have the total gold armor anymore. And it is motivated by Mr. Dahl. Well, Mr. Dahl himself is pretty much just is kind of uninspired because he's pretty much just
He looks kind of like the Mandarin, though.
yeah, I mean, but he's pretty much just
Sorta.
at the puppet master,
Yeah.
which so they're just sort of repeating that idea because instead of making a puppet that has voodoo qualities to it, he puts together these dolls out of clay. So he's kind of lame, but it is cool that it ends up in the new a new Iron Man costume, which is a lot better looking, has the red and stuff. Issue 49.
48 looks like a Kirby cover.
It might be a Kirby cover. Yeah, I forgot to
Well,
write down
it's
who.
kind of hard to tell on the Iron Man, but if you look at Mr. Dahl on the front, it sure does look like him.
Yeah, so that issue
Well,
was
49 is
okay.
a Kirby cover, and I think 50 is.
49. So 49 was not that great. It's the new Iron Man meets the Angel. But I did find it interesting that at this point only two issues of Iron Man had come out. Or I mean, excuse me, of X-Men.
X-Men, yeah.
And this is again Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, but the inker is Paul Reinman instead.
That's cool though. They're showing their universe. Do you know what I mean? They're
Yeah.
spreading their wings here.
That is the coolest thing about this issue, is that not just with the Angel appearing, but because the Angel appears, the X-Men appear as well. As earlier on, Tony Stark's doing some thing at his company and stuff, and the Angel gets in the way and gets blasted with radiation, and it turns him evil. And so he goes back to Xavier's mansion and quits the team and tells him he's going to go join the evil mutants. And he goes out and tries to like mess with people on bridge and stuff, and just tries to make a scene so that the bad mutants will come and find them.
Yeah.
But the other thing is also that the Avengers appear because the X-Men try to call the Avengers for help, and we see in individual panels that Bruce Banner's and Don Blake are both working, and Janet and Hank Pym are on a date, so it's only Iron Man that gets the call. But the resolution is really not that satisfying. Iron Man just pretty much just lets himself fall, and the fact that he's in danger shocks Angel out of being a bad guy back to his normal self. So just the whole like radiation turning him evil in the first place, and then it just being Iron Man in danger, just I don't know, it didn't really pop. But like you said, the cool thing is that as you go on more and more, you're seeing the Marvel Universe take shape and the characters appear in each other's books and stuff. And what I was also noticeable is that it wasn't that solid an issue for me, or story, if you want to say. But what's interesting about that to me is the contrast with Tales of Suspense 50. And I think it's kind of typical of these Iron Man stories at the time that you have some that are duds and then some that are really solid, and you could tell that this character is gonna last. And speaking of nemeses and stuff that he really needs a decent rogues gallery. This is called the Hands of the Mandarin. And after a couple of Ditko issues, you get Don Heck back doing both pencils and inks. And I really like Ditko on Spider-Man, but I prefer Don Heck on Iron Man. This
Was there,
has
was it all Iron Man? Do you know on these issues? Was
mm-mm.
the whole issue Iron Man?
No, the Iron Man stories were 14 to 18 or 19 pages, and then
Do you
there
know
was
what the
usually a
backup
backup.
was?
It varied, I think.
Maybe Predator,
It depends.
Monsters.
I think, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, sometimes.
Because on the covers, they don't have like. You know, on some of the titles, they would have like, okay, here's Iron Man, that's our primary. Then they'd have like a little circle. Oh, you could read the story of this. That's
Yeah.
our backup feature. On these covers that you're covering, there's no indication of what that backup feature is.
Yeah, they seem to have on Marvel Unlimited if sometimes Doctor Strange stories were appearing in Tales of Suspense at the same time. So when it was Doctor Strange, they will have the Doctor Strange stories on there. But then otherwise the backup. They don't have the backup on there, but I've read some of those first couple of Doctor Strange stories too. Those are good. So this issue 50, I it cracks me up sometimes the hyperbole. They have these little notes on the first page where it tells you, in this case, it says, "Do not start reading this tale if you are in a hurry. It should be read slowly so that you will savor all the drama, all the suspense, all the sensational, fantastic developments to the fullest." So I found it amusing that they were telling you how to read it. But the hyperbole turns out to be true in this case because it is a good issue. Iron Man is asked. Actually, by the government, it starts out he's at the Pentagon and they know about this Mandarin in China, in communist China. And they just really kind of sent him on a reconnaissance mission to find out more about this guy. And so Iron Man heads to China. I mean, but before that, he makes sure all is in order at his company and stuff, and we see there's an employee dinner coming up, and he can't go now because he can't say why, but it's because he needs to go to China for the government as Iron Man. And Pepper Potts is pissed because nobody noticed that she got a new hairdo. But one thing I'll say is that Pepper Potts and Happy Hogan, they were a really welcome addition when they came into the book. They given him in a supporting cast really helped out. The first few issues before they were around, you kind of felt like something was missing, and I enjoy reading them because, I mean, Pepper, she's definitely suffers from the 60s Marvel treatment of female characters, but her plots are still kind of amusing, and then Happy Hogan has a kind of a Ben Grimm, Jack Kirby feel to him. That his dialogue kind of cracks me up at times. But so while Iron Man heads off to China, he goes to the Mandarin's castle, and it's just, you can tell that there's some potential there because they are like sort of evenly matched as Iron Man goes up against the Mandarin and the Mandarin's rings and all the different things that he can do with his rings, and in a way that's sort of a form of technology, and Iron Man's a technological character. Tony Stark on his own, outside of the costume, can't do anything super powered. So it's kind of a neat matchup, and what helps the issue is that while this is all going on, you have this subplot where Pepper is she doesn't want to stay at home, and by now Happy's been hitting on her for a while and stuff, so she doesn't really want to go to the dinner with Happy, but she'd rather go to the dinner with him than stay at home alone. So they go to the dinner together, and there's a funny moment. At this time, Iron Man, it's all about transistors. I mean, transistors were so exciting, and and every single issue of Iron Man, they talk about his transistors and his transistor technology. And he opens up a compartment in the base of his red gauntlet on his left hand, and he's got a built-in slide rule calculator. And he does basically how he bests the Mandarin is that he does some quick trigonometry on his calculator, and he figures out the angle. He does some calculations with angles and velocities and stuff so that he can turn his body at the right angle that it'll backfire on the Mandarin when the Mandarin hits his armor. But the resolution just kind of leaves things open because at that point, Iron Man's always struggling with his power levels, and he has a lot of close calls in the early days of getting back to charge his chest thing to keep himself alive. And it almost acts like Green Lantern's power ring, how at times he just kind of has to book it because he's at low power. And that's what he has to do here. He bests the Mandarin briefly, but then just kind of has to take off. And I guess he's completed his mission. I mean, in terms of getting information for the government. But he hightails it back to the States, and there's a little bit of resolution of the subplot where Tony gets back in time to show up at the dinner, and Pepper's worried that Tony's going to think that she's with Happy, and so being an honorable guy won't ask her out. And then Happy's wondering if Tony's jealous of him because he's with Pepper, and Tony's not thinking about either of them because he's just concentrating and thinking about his new foe, the Mandarin, the fact that he's still at large. So overall, it's a pretty entertaining issue. And it's weird. It's like, I know I have hindsight, but I almost can feel like you don't run over a lot of villains where you think, oh, that's wasted potential, that character never appeared again. You can kind of see why they didn't, and then you hit like the Crimson Dynamo, or you hit the Mandarin, and even though I don't think it's just because I know that these characters appear again, I think I'm actually seeing something in the story where that this has potential,
Yeah.
So.
Oh, they could resurrect the doll man. Except
I
I
mean,
think he's got so ingrained in as a property now in other in DC.
yeah, I mean, they'd have, there's, I guess, I've heard people say there's no bad characters, but they would have to do something to make them more distinct. Because at the time, Stan just kind of took the Puppet Master and came up with a new name. And the Puppet Master was already a lot more interesting in the Fantastic Four.
It's almost like they took a lot of the design of him and made the Mandarin. They look so similar, especially color schemas and stuff.
Yeah, I really like that. That guy's not going to last, but let's just salvage from him what we can.
Yeah. Well, I will talk about Catwoman number 14, which is a 0 hour book. And I had just read Convergence Catwoman, so this was a good book to read. You may find it hard to believe, but this is bizarre. I was looking at my collection and I was missing 14, which is a 0 hour, and the next one I'm missing is 32, which is a Contagion, and then it seems to be like I was missing key issues in Events. The next one was 36, which was Legacy, all the Batman events. And what I could think of is I never stopped collecting these books, but it's my guess that the shop I was going to at the time was selling out of these, and the guy would put them in your box, and then if somebody came in and wanted to buy it right then and right then, he would pull it out of people's boxes. He was that kind of shop owner. So that's the only reason I think I was missing him, but now I have him. And this was 14, which tied into 0 hour. And there was some really interesting things in it. It was Joe Duffy as the writer and Jim Ballant as the he Ballant did a lot of the stuff. Like he did like 70 issues, I think, of Catwoman. Let's see, he did Man, he did 77 issues of Catwoman. That was incredible. Volume 2, if you include the miniseries before the. So this is Catwoman Volume 2 from 1994. And this is the zero-in tie-in where she's stealing a cat, like an Egyptian cat, and she brings it back to her house and is sleeping with all her other cats because she's got a lot of cats. And the clock goes off at a certain time, and then all of a sudden, 0 hour happened. Like weird shit happens. She wakes up, and she sees like a forest in her fucking house. Like what the fuck just happened? And then she goes to pet one of her cats, and she touches the fang of a saber-toothed tiger. And the saber-toothed tiger like rolls over on his back like he wants his belly pet. And she's like, "What the hell is going on here?" And then there's a caveman in her room, and she's like in a really sexy lingerie because Ballant does draw a sexy Catwoman, and she's in her lingerie and with the saber-toothed cat and. Like Kazar shows up, it reminded me of Kazar and his saber-toothed cat, Zabu, or I can't remember what his cat's name is,
Sounds right.
but it's like they're in her house, they're in an apartment building, and this caveman doesn't say much, but the cat's name is Tulik and his name is Ash. That's pretty much all the words that you get out of that caveman, and she goes, "Well, I'm gonna go." Put on my costume and see what the fuck is going on because this is the strangest shit I've ever seen. So she puts on her costume and then comes out and the caveman's there and he's shouting for his cat and the cat's missing. So they're basically the whole apartment complex is running into the cat and freaking out, the saber-toothed cat. And then they get outside and there's like dinosaurs and pterodactyls and brontosauruses and all kinds of crazy shit. And then some asshole hunter just comes out of nowhere and snags the cat. He snags the saber-toothed cat. And it's weird because he like starts off in a Gotham animal control center vehicle, and then he like goes through like this time whirl. Like there's this elliptical time whirl that he like goes through, and all of a sudden, then he's in a horse carriage with with the cat in it, and he's wearing like this old. So like time is just going batshit crazy. And Catwoman gets in her car, and eventually that car turns into horses. So they chase this guy, and this guy's delivering a cat to a guy that hunts animals, like a hunting lodge, and they're trying to save the cat pretty much from that hunting lodge, and they do take him down. And then there's this crazy scene at the end, which is an awesome scene because it shows like Catwoman in all of her costumes, like she's seeing all her possible pasts and potential futures in like one scene. And it's a really cool scene. I like it. It's really cool. I posted it on my wall, I think. And then Selina then kisses the caveman dude because they rescue the cat. And you find out that this caveman dude is really an investigator for a company, because there's like this side plot going on that'll probably lead into the next issue. This guy's hiring this guy, this Mr. Kingsley is hiring this new guy, Mr. Ashton, to go hunt down Catwoman because they're an insurance company and she's stealing all these jewels and artifacts that are insured, and this insurance company's losing a ton of money. So they hire this guy to go after her, and you find out that that caveman is really that guy, and that just time shifted and he turned into a caveman. So it's really bizarre. And then you have a couple pages of absolute white. So I would have loved to have been the artist drawing 0 hour at the time, because if you get a page rate on 1, 2, 3 pages of absolute white, and you did absolutely nothing. But it was a really fun comic. I enjoyed it. That was Catwoman number 14 from 1994.
Nice. I like the effect of those blank pages, though.
Yeah, it really is a cool effect, because the thing they do really well is in this comic book, and it's executed really well, is you get a sense of that time is getting really jacked up. Like it's shifting so much that like you'll be doing something on some technology, and all of a sudden that technology is something else. And you in this particular book, it always seems like you're regressing in time, but I'm sure in some of the other books, things were going advanced too. Do you know what I mean? They're going into the future, and time was just getting weird. But yeah, it was a comic book I've never read before, and like I said, for some reason I missed a lot of event books in Catwoman, and that's the only reason I could think why. And I finally filled out my run, minus a couple of annuals, because that's another thing that I used to avoid is annuals. So I have a couple annuals I need to pick up.
Nice.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. It was fun to read this with the Convergence Catwoman. And you can actually see they're very similar. You know, they did a really good job capturing the time period. This Catwoman that I read is 0 hour. The Convergence Catwoman is pre-zero hour, like just before 0 hour happens. So, yeah, it's cool.
I ordered a small amount of the Convergence books, but because I wasn't confident, or not that I wasn't confident, but I wasn't sure where I wanted to commit up front to the whole shebang, but down the road there's some others that I didn't order up front that I might like to read eventually, you know. I figure it'll be easy later on to pick them up at a sale or something like that. Whereas I ordered the ones I knew that I definitely wanted to read right away. But a lot of them, I mean, I'm hearing good things, and at least from opinions that I trust, that they're enjoyable for. And I think a lot of the ones that I went towards were ones that are coming out this week and next, the ones that are earlier, from earlier in DC history.
The ones that I found that were really, really weird was the Atom and Aquaman. And in the Atom, it really, 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 really worked. And I think it really worked because it was pre-Flashpoint, and it was Ray Palmer pre-Flashpoint, because at this point, Ryan Choi was dead. So it really felt in like Gail Simone type weirdness. The Aquaman, I had a hard time. It was still really enjoyable, but I had a hard time envisioning like where I was. Do you know what I mean? Or what was happening during this time. And I read every single Aquaman that I know about, except for like I'm missing quite a few of the Silver Age, early Silver Age ones. But other than that, I have every Aquaman and I've read it, but it was hard for me to see. And then the thing that Convergence does really well, though, if you're lost, is you could go read the back matter and it'll tell you like where you're at. But even when I read the back matter for Aquaman, I was still a little confused at where I was and when it happened. So that was the only one that felt a little weird for me, as far as like time and what was going on. Everything else has been like, yeah, I remember that. I remember that. So I might have to revisit Aquaman at some point.
Nice. The other one thing you made me think of when you're talking about that issue was that recently this movie from the from 1981 was re-released in theaters this month, and it's gotten a lot more press. It's called Roar. Have you heard about it at all?
No, I haven't.
It was It did come out in 1981, but hardly anyone saw it. It was by Tippi Hedren and her husband at the time, the producer of Exorcist, and her daughter Melanie Griffith is in it. The whole thing about it is that it's about a guy who lives with his wild animals, and his wife and three children go to visit him, but he's not there, and the animals are talking about elephants, tigers, lions, leopards, cheetahs, and stuff. Well, the thing about it is that they were really super unsafe with how they made the film, prior to the film, they had this dumb idea that if they raised lion cubs in their house, because they were raising them from babies, that it would be safe, and it totally wasn't. And they did not take the proper precautions, and it's crazy how, like the cinematographer of the film actually was scalped by one of the lions, and he had to get 220 stitches. Tippi Hedren herself was thrown off of an elephant back and fractured her leg. She got bit in the neck by a lion and had 38 stitches. Melanie Griffin, who was only like 14 at the time, was also attacked. She had 50 stitches to her face, and they thought she might lose her eye.
Damn.
Noel Marshall, he was attacked so many times he ended up with gangrene. None of the animals weren't injured, but over 70 people, the cast and crew, were injured.
Hope they had a lot of insurance.
Yeah, the assistant
Which also
director.
had to do with Catwoman.
Right. One of the assistant directors had throat ripped open, jaw bitten, and almost had an ear ripped off. He was he survived it, but was near fatal. And so, like, recently, Tippi Hedren's talked about how, it's embarrassing now to look back and how stupid they were.
Why
But
is
there's
it coming?
these.
Why is it coming back to theaters? Do you know?
I don't know what motivated it. It's just like the interesting aspect of the filming, like the how dangerous it was, or but they freaking like there's I'm looking at this website. I should send you the link. There's actually pictures from when they had the lions living in their house, and I'll send you the link because there's pictures of they actually let one of the lions sleep in bed with Melanie Griffith, and
Jeez.
like she's like playing in the pool, and there's like a lion has its paw on her head, and she's like spitting water into the lion's open mouth and
Oh,
stuff.
God Almighty.
It's freaking, they were nuts. Let me see, how do I get back to? So
Did
yeah, I don't know.
anybody die?
No, but there was, as you can tell from all the entries that listed, there's like some close calls.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that is.
So well, I read the other thing I read was Amazon in the Kindle store. They have the first couple collections of, well, there's a number, I think it must be Dark Horse is doing, because there's a number of Dark Horse collections and omnibuses and stuff where they'll have the first volume or two for a lot cheaper, I guess, to get you to try them and maybe buy some more at the normal price. So they have the first, I picked up the first Eerie Archives
Oh, nice.
for $4 digital. They also had the first two Creepy Archives for $4. They'll probably pick up the other ones too, but so I had read the first issue of Eerie a while ago, so I actually read Eerie number two. So these all had a bunch of short stories. So I'll go through them quickly, just saying who the different stories are. Basically, a lot of the there's different artists on each one of them. A lot of them kind of they went towards a similar style to each other. It's black and white. You could tell it's different artists, but it's not a radical range of style. But I referenced this first story earlier because it's called Footsteps of Frankenstein, and it was written by Archie Goodwin with art by Reed Crandall. And it's about a guy who, a doctor who goes to northern London. He's looking for a guy named Amos Sebastian, who you find out he is was a student of. So Amos is his former teacher. But when he goes around town, this English town, asking for people or asking for this guy, people give him the cold shoulder, and when he goes into a pub, he gets thrown right out of the pub, and then followed by men from the pub who start beating on him, just for asking around about this Amos Sebastian, and he ends up blacking out from from getting beat up. But when he wakes up, he's in Sebastian's castle, and he had been saved by Sebastian and this monster that he created, that looks pretty much like a Frankenstein, and he tells the younger doctor that he called for him because he needs his help, and he's been experimenting, and he created this monster from there was a car crash, and two men died in the car crash, and he took the bodies and brought them back to his castle and created this monster out of the two men's bodies, and he needs King, the name of the younger doctor, he needs him to his help because he wants to put his mind, he's gotten old, wants to put his mind in the body of the monster. And meanwhile, while this is going on, there's men from the village see that there's all these, they're having power problems in the town, and they see all this electrical power going on at the castle up on the hill. So that's where the whole mob thing comes in. They start getting together and heading up the hill to the castle. But before they get there, the operation's successful. And once Sebastian is now in the body of the monster, he knocks King down and tells him he actually caused the automobile wreck that killed the two men in the first place. And then heads out to attack the villagers that are coming up the hill. But like these stories always did, there's a surprise ending, and he still has the electrodes in his skull that were part of the experiment. And he gets struck by lightning and turned to ash. I won't talk about each one of them. There was another story that was called,
Was this from number two, you said?
yeah.
Okay. Why did you skip number one? Is it just you read
I
number
well,
one
no,
a
I mean,
while back?
I had read it. I just so I wanted to read something new.
Oh, okay.
Instead of going back, but the next story is in the style of it's like anthology style, so it's not like I had to talk about what's in number one or whatever. But one for D Money, D Money, play on words there, by E. Nelson Bridwell and Angelo Torres. This is about a guy named Vernon Hale who he as the story starts, he's sneaking down to the cellar to see what his uncle is doing, and his uncle turns out is de summoning a demon called Olier. And as Vernon watches, his uncle, who's an older guy, forces this demon, who's trapped by the summoning pentagram, to give him money. And so this is the source of his uncle's riches. And then we see a flashback where his uncle won't help him out of a jam that he's in. He owes money, and his uncle gives him a cold shoulder and writes, and on top of it, because his nephew's in trouble again, he writes him out of his will. So back in the present, Vernon beats his uncle to death. And when his uncle dies, his body falls onto the summoning pentagram. So then Vernon drags him out of the pentagram over to the cellar stairs to make it look like his uncle fell down the stairs and that it was an accident. And then he happens to find the book that his uncle uses to summon the demons. So he decides to use it himself to get money the way that he saw his uncle do, but he doesn't count or doesn't pay attention to the fact that when he dragged his uncle's body out of the pentagram, it disturbed the chalk and broke the pentagram. So when he summons Olier, Olier is not trapped by the pentagram and just kills him.
that's what the cover has on it, I assume.
Is it? Yeah, I forget what the
Yeah.
cover shows.
Oh, the cover shows the summoning the demon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's a story called Eye of the Beholder, again by Archie Goodwin, this time with art by Jay Tacey. That one's about a guy who is missing his young wife dies, and he finds a way to bring her back to life. But then everyone's acting real weird towards her, and it turns out that he sees her. Going with the title of Eye of the Beholder, he sees her as his wife, how she used to look, but everyone else actually sees a corpse walking around. There's Flame Fiend by Eando Binder and Gray Morrow, where a guy kills his business partner because his business partner found out that he'd been stealing money from him. But his business partner ends up possessing flames so that, like, anytime he's anywhere near a fire, his business partner, the flames start to take the shape of a man, and that tries to kill him and warns him that he's going to die in fire. And so then there's a sequence where he's constantly running away from, he's trying to avoid flames, but no matter what, whether it's birthday candles or a backyard barbecue or whatever, he always ends up near flames. So finally he goes hunting in the forest to try to get away from society, and a forest fire starts. So he runs and he jumps in a river, thinking that that saved him, but he ends up catching pneumonia and he dies from the pneumonia. And while he's dying, the flame fiend is laughing and that, saying that he burned up anyway, but with fever instead of fire.
Nice.
Yeah. There's a cool pinup of a werewolf by John Severin that kind of plays into the story that follows, which is called To Pay the Piper by Larry Ivy, no relation. It's actually spelled Ivie, and Gene Colan. And this is kind of a neat cross between vampires and werewolves and the P Pied Piper, where there's this town. It actually starts off with this young female vampire being staked while her father watches. And this town has a plague of vampires, so this guy named Sandor comes to town and says, if you pay me, I'll get rid of the vampires. I can play my pipe and they will follow me out of town. And the mayor's like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And he actually doesn't have the money to pay the piper, but he doesn't believe him for a second anyways. But sure enough, Sandor is able to lead the vampires to the town, and when they don't pay him, he does what the piper does in the original Pied Piper story. He leads their children out of town, and that's the end of the normal story of Pied Piper. But what happens in this case is that they actually do catch up with the Pied Piper and kill him and get the children back, and they think that they're fine. They just, they just seem scratched up from the, because they found him in this patch of brambles. Well, it turns out that that patch of brambles was full of wolfsbane, and one of the myths about werewolves, besides getting bitten, is that you can get turned by wolfsbane. And so that night, they all the children turn into werewolves and attack and kill their parents. There's a story about by Archie Goodwin and Alex Toth called Vision of Evil, which is about a guy that in an insane asylum that paints these evil paintings, and that one was okay. And then the final story is also by Archie Goodwin. He wrote like half of these. The art's by Joe Orlando, and it's called Ahead of the Game. And there's this guy on a safari where he kills an albino gorilla, even though the native tour guides are warning him that the animal's sacred, that he shouldn't kill it. But he doesn't give a shit. He kills it and then just cuts off his head, off the head, and takes it as a trophy and leaves the body just laying there. But so then the man, his wife, and his crew and stuff, they leave wherever they're at, on a ship, on their ship. And while they're on their way back to the States, there's a man, a crewman of the ship, that gets just bashed to a pulp, and all their luggage is destroyed. And back in the States, he mounts the head of the gorilla on the wall, and he's showing it off to his groundskeeper, who I guess appreciates hunting and stuff. But then his groundskeeper later that day is smashed to death, like the crewman was, just beaten to a pulp with blunt object, it looks like. But they also see gorilla prints around the body. So his wife Vera, she freaks out. She's like, "We got to call the police." And Harry, the hunter, he says, "No, I'm not. This is my home. I'm protecting my own home. It's my job." So he stays there alone at the mansion with the gun, while she goes for the police, and the headless gorilla arrives to attack him. So when Vera gets back with the police, she goes in, and instead of the gorilla's head mounted on the wall, it's Harry's head mounted where the gorilla's head used to be. And that was the last story in the thing. But yeah, there, I mean, because there's always a twist, it's like you expect there to be a twist, so you kind of know something's coming, but they're entertaining and nonetheless fun little stories. And they never, none of them are all that long, so if one's not as good as the others, it's over pretty quick.
That
But as
sounds like a
if
cool collection.
yeah,
Like
so it was a f
I wouldn't mind getting like did well I don't want the digital version, but I like to read it if it was on sale like at a con like the DC Archives.
Yeah,
That sounds like a cool thing. Especially the art, I think would be
right.
really awesome.
Yeah, the art is nice. All the art was solid, and they're cool collections. There's a lot of them of creepy and eerie. Dark Horse has put out a lot of them, and yeah, it was a fun change of pace.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk about the one I like next, and save the best for last. John Sable, Freelance Number 6. This is Mike Grell, and I love this book. This is the conclusion to his origin story. So, as we left off in issue 5, which might have been like 7 or 8 episodes ago of this podcast, he was imprisoned, and he kind of had no reason to live. He lost his family, went after people. He was in a prison, and one of his old mercenary buddies said, "You know, I can get you out of prison. You go help me hunt down these people that are destroying the area and killing the black rhino and, you know, for their horns and all that stuff." So he got out, and then there was a change of the guard. It shows a lot of action scenes where he's actually taking down some of these people killing the animals, but it shows also that there was a change of the politics in Africa. So the guy he was working for was moved out of power, and another guy came in, and they were going to put him back in prison, but he eventually escaped back. And what this is it's basically Mike, his artist for the kids' book, reading his biography. And what's really cool about this story is she doesn't get to finish the pages because some of the pages are missing. So she goes to the editor, Eden, and says, "Can you tell me what happened after Africa? You know, like what, why is he the way he is?" And like she's like so engrossed with John Sable right now. And it turns out that he turned in this book to Eden. Like nobody wanted to buy this book. Like they were like, "We can't sell this book. It's too dark." It was kind of like his autobiography, and didn't think they could sell it, but they said, "You know what? In your book," Eden said, "you had this little clip that used to read your son, you know, used to read your son this story about leprechauns. I want you to run with that." So that's how he gets that alias, and starts writing the children's books under this new alias. And it's funny how he has to create that alias, because B.B. Phlegm, he creates him because he didn't read the small print in the contract that said you're going to have to do book signings, because at the same time he was becoming a popular mercenary. He became like a mercenary to hunt down somebody. Like there was this villain out there, this crime guy that was had a bounty on his head, and he brought him in and took that bounty and was all over the news, and that kind of like made him like hire this guy, and he became big and went all over Paris, and he had like no intention of ever going back into the book business, except that his book became a hit, so he had to make up this alias B.B. Phlegm and show up to these signings. And there's this cool signing that he showed up to, and the kid's like turning back to his mom and saying, "I think he said the S word, mom." So it's
Nice.
like really cool how he became the way he is. And then it shows kind of like him leading into his current adventure, where he went after the guy with the white hat and the white hair. And you learn to he actually kills him. John Sable kills him because he was behind the killing of his wife and kids. And but the thing is there's still a lot of mystery left. Like he's like, if you kill me, you're not gonna know the truth. And he has to go find out what the truth is, and that's how it ends. But it's really cool to learn why he became B.B. Phlegm and why he came up with the children's characters, the leprechauns. It's because his agent told him to, and that they couldn't sell the book about his past history. So she like read the book and picked something out of it and told him to run with it, and it became like a huge hit, like a commercial hit. So it's like a wonderful it was a wonderful ending to the origin story of John Sable. Loved it.
Yeah, 'cause it did it kind of it gave you an origin of parts of his past that you didn't necessarily expect to get an origin of.
Yeah, it
You
kind
know what
of
I
was
mean?
like the Buck Rogers thing where it's like threw the fast one at the end, you know? Like I always thought he came up with that, but it was really his editor Eden saying, "I can't sell this book. Nobody would want." He was tired of rejection. He basically came back from Africa. He didn't know what to do with his life. His family's gone. He's like, "What the fuck do I do?" He tried to go to publicist. Nobody wanted the book. He got tired of rejection. He finally had an interview with Eden. Eden said, "You know, she was an up and coming editor too, and she's like, I like what you wrote. I just can't sell this book, but I can't sell this." So she's the one that like got him popular. And really publicized his stuff and made him show up as this B.B. Phlegm guy. And Mike is his artist for that book, and she's just infatuated with him. Like she's almost obsessed. Like she finds him a tragic character, and he is a tragic character. And it'll be interesting to see going forward what that relationship with Mike and him becomes, you know. But it's really cool. Like I highly recommend this, and the art is amazing.
Because I remember in issue one, Mike is pissed about the working situation, and she ends up following him back to his apartment, and that's when she finds out
Yeah, she
about
finds
his
out.
double identity. And where she becomes more, way more interested in what's going on with him.
Yeah, it was a really cool issue.
Nice. So that was the Continuing Adventures of John Sable, one of our periodic features here on Geek Brunch Retrocast. This is a second installment, at least. We'll see if there are future ones of something for me, because I have another Star Trek report.
Oh, nice. That seems to be popular with a lot of people that listen.
That's cool. They can't, because they're probably like, this guy's never seen these episodes. This is really interesting to hear someone react to them for the first time. But I'm not going to talk about every issue because, or every episode, because that between like in the last 2 weeks, I watched like 15 episodes, I think. So I finished up season one, picking up last time I stopped talking with the Space Seed. I think it was called the sort of Wrath of Khan prequel. So I watched through the end of episode or season one, and then I watched the first five episodes of season two. So I'll just talk about some of the episodes. Season one, episode 24 was This Side of Paradise, and this was where the Enterprise is in go in to investigate a colony on a planet called Omicron Seti 3, where as far as I know, something happened to the colony, but when they beam down, the colony seems fine and they all seem almost abnormally happy. And it turns out to be there's this strange plant life that makes you complacent and sort of a dangerous way. And this has Spock, because Spock gets affected, he actually really, his human side really comes out, and it's a rare romance story for Spock. One of the things I enjoyed about the episode is that DeForest Kelly, the actor that plays Bones, he's actually from Georgia originally. So when his the one of the ways that his character is affected, he comes like, it's just this real laid back guy. So he uses his presumably his southern accent that he had growing up throughout the episode. Just as this kind of like laid back southern dude. So it's kind of fun, one of those fun episodes where the characters get affected in such a way that they end up acting sort of out of character, but it still reveals some things about them. Episode 26, Errand of Mercy. This is cool to see because it's the first appearance of the Klingons ever. And it was sort of an interesting tableau that they set up where the Klingons and the Federation are at war, and the whole thing ends up taking place on this planet called Organia. It's a non-aligned planet, and Spock and Kirk go down and they're trying to convince the Council of Elders on Organia, who at first seem really welcome, they're total pacifists. And Kirk gets increasingly frustrated with the council and their unwillingness to do anything, seemingly to even protect their own people. And then the Klingons end up actually taking occupation of the planet. So Kirk and Spock are basically stuck in the situation and trying to survive the Klingon occupation. And Spock's pretending to be a traveling Vulcan merchant, and Kirk and the leader of the Klingons, they have an interesting rapport where there's some mutual respect going on, but they're ultimately villains. So I enjoyed that episode, and last one from season one I'll mention is the classic The City on the Edge of Forever. Which they recently did a comic version. This, I had even heard of this episode.
That's a popular sci-fi writer, right?
Yeah, it was written by Harlan Ellison, at least
Yeah.
originally, although apparently it had a lot of rewrites from his original script, but sometimes that's a bad thing. Sometimes that ends up with movies and stuff. If there's a lot of rewrites, it ends up being bad. I don't know what he thinks of it, but the end result was still a really good episode. I thought it deserves the status that it has. It deals with time travel, and Bones gets injected accidentally with this fictional drug. Not fictional in the universe, but it's not a real drug in our universe. Forget the name of it, but it's such a high dosage that he goes real crazy, and he ends up jumping into this portal, going back and past. And Spock and Kirk follow after. I think it's like it's early 20th century. I forget the exact date, but. So, Spock can't really do the robe thing, so he wears like a beanie hat the whole time because it got kind of like the workman kind of outfits. And Joan Collins, a very young Joan Collins, is in the episode, and she's a really good guest star. I really was just familiar from Joan Collins from her later soap opera days, and had not seen her. This young before, and she was really pretty. Really interesting love interest for Kirk in the episode, and I'm proof positive that there are still people out there that haven't seen this episode, so I won't spoil. But I was really impressed with the script, and it not just going for like a happy ending where everything resolves in a perfect way. Really good episode. Season two, I'll talk about a couple of these. Season two introduces Chekhov to the Enterprise, and it's kind of funny, especially in the first few episodes. I feel like the camera is purposely showing him off. People have said that he was added to the show as like, I mean, one of the things was that they made him Russian because the show, it was felt that the show was kind of showing disrespect to the Russians who, and their accomplishments with space travel, that there wasn't a Russian on the crew. So that's part of the reason that they made him Russian, but he has a real like Davy Jones from the Monkees look, and they cast a attractive young male actor. And it just seemed to me, maybe I just had that fact in my head and I was reading into it, but it just seems to me that the camera features him a lot, especially in the first few episodes. Maybe just because he's a new character, but like they were showing like, hey, look at this handsome young man, lady, that we got on the show now. The first episode of season two is Amok Time, and I'm becoming a definite Spock fan, so I enjoyed this episode, and it's a rare episode that actually takes place on Vulcan, and
What was the title of that called?
Amok Time,
Amok.
AMOK. Yeah. And it
What
has
was
to
the
do with
title of the first one you talked about?
This Side of Paradise.
Side of Paradise.
This has to do all with the Vulcan mating rituals, where Spock ends up starts acting real weird. Bones's nurse makes some special Vulcan soup, and he just kicks her out of his cabin and throws the bowl of soup against the wall. And he's just like flipping out and acting super strange, and it's really funny. It was good fun for Leonard Nimoy, and he's really, really embarrassed. I mean, Vulcans in general are really embarrassed about this effect on them, but it means that he needs to return to Vulcan and participate in this mating ritual, and it's a really weird ritual, and the woman that he's supposed to marry, though, fortunately, is very good looking, but she's fallen in love with someone else, and so there's a nice like bromance moment where Spock takes he can bring a couple like I don't know, almost the equivalent of like best men or whatever, so he takes Kirk and Bones with him. And so they're there, and Kirk ends up being selected as the champion for his wife. He has to, it's her right to invoke that Spock fight to the death for her, for the privilege of mating with her. And she surprises everyone by selecting Kirk as her champion, and so then they have to. Kirk and Spock have to fight to the death, and there's a neat way that Bones is key in resolving the situation in a way that Kirk and Spock, and you know that the characters are both going to survive, but it's satisfying because of the neat way that it's written. The way that the script handles the situation is clever, and it's a fun insight into Vulcan love, or whatever you want to call it. And quickly, just a couple more. Last time, Dave Levine had responded to me covering Star Trek, and he mentioned this next episode, which is the fourth episode of season two, called Mirror Mirror, as a really good one. And so I was excited to get to this, and it lived up to his hype. It's like a first alternate reality story, and so I was thinking about this story when you guys were talking on DC Noise about how DC always acts like alternate realities, or not just DC, but they act like it's this hard concept to grasp for people. And I was just thinking about this episode and how, it's been in popular entertainment all the way back to the 60s. It's not that strange a concept. But there's a transporter malfunction. So let me see if I can remember that. It's Kirk, Bones, Uhura, and George Takei, Sulu, I think are the four. But or no, I think it's just, well, anyways, the four of them there's a malfunction so that they end up getting transferred to an alternate reality, and then their counterparts get transferred to the regular re reality, and the reality that they end up in is where most of the story takes place is it's instead of the Federation, it's the Terran Empire, and the crew of the Enterprise are ruthless. I mean, they advance in position by killing their superiors, and Kirk finds himself. He's thought to be his counterpart, so he's thought to be this Kirk who has killed his way into his position and is secretly using this alien technology where in his cabin where he can just blink people out of existence. And again, it's really neat to see these characters act, and he has to deal with a Sulu who is very ambitious, and Sulu actually tries to take him out. And Barba Luna, the actress that played Hawk's wife, is in this episode as the other Kirk's lover. So that was kind of neat to see. I think I mentioned when we covered those episodes that she had a role on Star Trek, but I hadn't seen it yet. So yeah, this is a really cool episode. Some of the other ones, there were other decent ones and then there were some that were not so great. And the most recent that I watched, though, is probably my least favorite of all the ones that I watched, was it's called The Apple. And I mean, the special effects, talking about special effects, like I usually don't care, but sometimes like they're so bad that it's hard to look past. And they're on this planet where this computer is pretty much controlling all of the people, and they pretty much just live to serve, and they try to do a little bit of a debate about whether or not they should interfere because the people, they're healthy, they don't have any problems and stuff, but they also don't really have any life, they don't understand love. Or anything like that. But like I said, it's a plot that had already been done better on the show a couple times, and the costuming and the special effects and stuff like that were just really not up to snuff on this one. So it was kind of silly, but there were still things about it, though. The thing I'm finding about this show is that the characters are so strong that even in the bad episodes, there are entertaining moments because you've gotten to know the characters, and the characters are so interesting that there's still moments. It's still watchable. So we'll see how it goes, but this is definitely the most, like I said last time. I had watched up to where I started last time in two small batches of being interested in the show, where then I left off for a long period of time. But I would say that this is definitely the most interested I've been in the show before, and I'm really getting into and understanding the appeal of Star Trek and finding that it's very entertaining how the show can go. You can watch back-to-back episodes and they can be so different from each other.
Does Kara watch this with you or?
No, I've just been watching it by
Oh, okay.
myself. Yeah.
She's not interested in some of the stuff you do.
Yeah, well, it's also a time factor. We usually have one or two things that we're watching together. And we'll make sure that we fit those in. And then just kind of do our own thing at other times.
That's
So,
cool.
yeah.
You're
Now that,
Netflixing it, or is this out?
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Netflix, like now that Game of Thrones is back, well, that's something we watch. So we've been watching, started watching that last week when it
Yeah.
started up again.
All right. That sounds like a fun thing to do at some point. I really should, 'cause that's my that's the team of Star Trek that I like. Like I could never get into Next Generation, but I've only seen a lot of these as a kid, and I don't remember a lot of them. Like I remember some of the highlights you mentioned, and there's a lot of ones that I didn't watch, like the Khan stuff, and but I remember Mirror Mirror watching that, and I think I watched City of the Edge of Forever. Some of the others don't sound familiar, but it could be just because I just don't remember. I was very young when I saw them. But
Yeah,
go ahead.
well, I was just gonna finish up by saying I think I don't know, I just for some reason I just it never clicked with me before, but right now it's really appealing to me on the episodes, especially the episodes that are
Sorry.
really smartly written and have some neat uses of technology
Yeah.
or rather neat uses of science and some really smartly written episodes and different science fiction authors writing episodes and stuff. And I had periodically watched after school, I think I've said before, some Next Generation episodes, but I'm excited to get to the point of watching some of the movies,
Right.
which will still take me a little while to get there, but
Star Trek or the Next Generation or all of them?
well, we'll
They're all
see.
kind of
Right
go together.
now, I'm particularly excited to see the story continue for the original crew.
Yeah, see, those are the movies like I love. Like the first one, I haven't revisited since I watched it at the theater, and I hated it when I saw it, but at some point I want to rewatch it. But I see Khan, I see Search for Spock, I see all of those. My favorites are Khan and the Klingon one. I even own the soundtrack for it, where they go after the Klingon ambassador. I can't remember. It's episode 6, Undiscovered Country. Those are by far my favorite. But I enjoy all the movies. I don't remember a lot of the details of the original, but yeah, that's something I'd like to revisit at some point. Barb is more of a especially Next Generation, like and Deep Space Nine, like she's seen all of them. I don't think she watched Voyager, like she couldn't get into it. And I don't think she watched Enterprise, but those two she like watched religiously. So she's like a bigger Star Trek fan than me. By far. But we watch a lot of stuff together. Like the only thing that she doesn't care if she misses, I mean, there's a lot of shows that she watches that I don't watch. Like I'll read comics and they're in the background, but I don't know what's going on. But as far as the stuff that I like to watch, she watches almost all of it. Like she doesn't care if she misses Buck Rogers or if she misses Comic Book Men, but other than that, you know, we watch TV pretty much, like Gotham and Flash and all that stuff together. Arrow, I make her watch that She'll like walk out of the room and say, "You can keep it running." And I'm like, "No, I'm gonna pause it. You come back and watch this." But yeah, it's funny how that works.
It all depends. Like, I actually watched all of Daredevil already,
Yeah.
I'm gonna have her watch a couple episodes with me to see what she thinks, because I have a feeling because she likes the Christopher Nolan Batman movies,
Yeah.
and I've also given her like Year One and a few other Batman stories to read, and she digs like I think she's the street level characters are more appealing to her, and like a little bit more dark, the darker characters, and so I'm thinking that she might dig the new Daredevil series, and she's been hearing good things about it other places too. So yeah, we'll work through different things like that sometimes.
Very cool. There's a couple things I want to mention before I go into my book. This will just take a second. But I was reading Back Issue Magazine number 79. And this is a feature on the Charlton Action Heroes. And really good issue. But one thing I learned in here that was really fascinating was how Charlton was formed. And this guy John Santalejo, he tried to impress his mu music loving girlfriend by publishing a magazine, like a hit parade type magazine. And what he would do is reprint the lyrics of popular songs, and he was doing it to he was really I think he was into like brick. He was a brick mason. But because he like was infatuated with this girlfriend, he started to print these magazines. And what that did was it put him into prison for copyright infringement.
Nice.
In prison for a year. And there he met his partner, Charlton Edward Levy, who was a disbarred lawyer. So Charlton was formed by a couple of people that were in prison together.
Couple
And
criminals.
it's really fascinating because of how they tried to survive. You know, they bought their own printing press, and Dick Giordano was a huge part of them early on, but they couldn't compete with other companies as far as page rates and stuff. So they tried to offer other benefits. They don't say what those other benefits are, but it would be interesting to know what those other benefits were. But I just started reading the article, and it's really a fascinating historical piece, and I can't wait to get into the actual characters. Like I started reading how they took off, and like the Fighting Five was supposed to be like Shield, and they were worried about they were gonna get sued for by Marvel because they used the FF. But it's crazy how they like saw what was popular in other mediums, like other comic book publishers, and tried to mimic it. And the other thing they tried to do really distinctively different from other companies, with the exception of one character, is they tried to make all of their characters non-powered. Like Blue Beetle, Peter Cannon, Thunderbolt, Peacemaker, all these characters didn't have powers, except for Captain Atom was the only one that did.
That's why they made a point of calling them action
Action
heroes.
heroes, yeah. So it was it's a fascinating article. I'll talk about it more when I probably dig in a little deeper. It's got my interest peaked. Like this might be another dead universe that I go into. I have a lot of it already, but I sure would like to complete it, you know, at some point. And they're still relatively affordable. So that leads me into my book of the week, probably the year. I just love this thing. It's Batman Gotham Knights number 43, and it continues with a lot of books. I've been covering a lot of this in the Retrocast. The Bane storyline where Bruce thinks he's his brother, and some of the
Oh,
other
right.
storylines. Well, this continues from the last storyline I talked about, where there's some investigator that's going after him and serving up court order for the way he treated Jason Todd, because Jason Todd is dead, and he's trying to sue him for negligence and treating a minor, you know. And one of the things I just want to point out is Scott Beatty has got to be one of my favorite Batman writers. Like, he really does get it. This is like a bat fat I absolutely love. The cover features, what do they call it? An homage to another cover, the first appearance of Batgirl. It's got Batgirl on the cover and Batman and Robin swinging back in. It's by Brian Boland, and it's after Infantino, Carmen Infantino cover. It even says that on the cover. And it
Nice.
opens up with a pizza guy delivering a pizza to Bruce, and he can't get into the manor because the gate is closed. And coincidentally, Barbara Gordon comes on her car and says, "Yeah, I'll drive you to the front." And that's the guy that's serving him his court order. He pretends it's a that he really couldn't get into the building because Bruce never ordered a pizza. He's just hanging out there trying to get in to serve the court order. And he does serve the court order, and Barbara feels really, really bad. And at this time, you know, she's Oracle. She's in her wheelchair. She feels horrible because she let this guy into the gate. And he goes back down into the Batcave, and there's such an awesome drawing of him staring at the costume of Robin, Jason Todd, because he's dead. But the brilliance of this is it flashes the same scene forward to a year ago, where Barbara Gordon could walk, and she's walking into the Batcave, and they're discussing him looking at the costume inside of one of these tubes. And he goes, "Dick has made it clear that he no longer considers himself to be part of this family. The display acknowledges his service to the cause." Like, he put that display case in honor of Dick Grayson leaving for the Titans. And they have an interesting discussion, because Bruce says he still loves you, and Barbara says he's with her now. And he goes, "That thing with the alien won't last." That's what Bruce says. And Barbara says, "He'll outgrow his crush on me like he outgrew the circus costume." It's just such brilliant banter. And then they have like a scene where he wants her to costume up again, because he needs to go after the Joker, and he's like, "I need you to be here for Jason. He needs to be monitored." And this is like right after Jason threw that fucker off of the building. And Bruce goes, "I want to believe that he slipped, but I have a feeling that Jason threw him off the building and he needs to be watched. I have to go after the Joker. Can you please don the costume again and watch Jason and let me know how he does?" And she agrees to it, even though she says, "After the crisis, I don't want to be Batgirl anymore." And Robin shows up, and the banter between them is just brilliant. Jason Todd is at his peak. They're going after these guys that are stealing stuff in the ocean. They go out in the Batboat, and they have this little ordeal. And Batgirl gets on the boat and takes out these guys with guns. Jason almost gets killed, though. There's like machine gun fires, and they're shooting him, and he manages to avoid it in the water, but those bullets are zipping past him. And there's a scene where she throws him a life thing, and she says, "Where are you? Come on, Robin, grab that thing." And then some guy just gets one of these hooks and puts it into Barbara Gordon's shoulders. And fucking Jason Todd grabs one of those harpoon guns and shoots this guy right in the fucking hand. And he's like
Jeez.
bleeding to death. And Barbara tells him, "What the hell was that?" Don't tell me you ran out of batarangs or slingshots or whatever you're packing in your utility belt. And Jason says it's called payback. Anybody cuts one of us gets cut in return. I love it. So formed. He's already kind of said that he did. The guy didn't slip off the building. He fucking threw him off. And later on, he stole the pack of cigarettes and he's out there smoking. And Barbara says, "You better not be smoking." But he pulls the cigarette out of his mouth and steps on the cigarette. But it was like the first time I've seen Jason Todd smoke. It was just such really cool. And then it flash forwards to him staring at the container in the present where he's looking at it, and Jason's dead at this time. And there's just such good banter. Barbara says, "Bruce knows his death wasn't your fault." And he asked Barbara, "Was I a good father?" And she says, "You weren't his father, but if you were, you would need to believe that you did all you could for him." And Bruce says, "Did I? I think you did, despite the demons troubling him, the anger in his heart. And if you were his father, you would know that the parents aren't meant to bury their children." And man, it's just such good shit. I just loved it. There were so many things to take out of this story. Roger Robinson is also an artist that, man, I just dig his art. He is really good. And then it had a backup, which is really cool, by John Ostrander and artist Philip Bond. It's one of those black and white backups, but man, this is so good. I just can't believe how good this Batman Gotham Knights is. It really feels like it covers all the characters. Like, it's a Bat Family book.
I didn't read a lot of those, but I remember that kind of being the approach.
Yeah, it was so good.
I was looking, because I know the name Scott Beatty. I can't remember what, if anything, I read by him, and so I was looking him up, and I think I read, because I had read a lot of cross-gen, and he took over Ruse
Bruce, yeah,
after
Mark
Mark
Waid.
Waid, so I probably read those, and then I was noticing that he did some stuff with Chuck Dixon, like co-wrote that Batgirl Year One and Robin Year One and Nightwing Year One. But I was wondering if you had read, because it looks like he did that. I didn't realize he did that Buck Rogers series for Dynamite that they did like 4 or 5 years ago. I was wondering if you read any of that.
I did read it. It was really weird.
Was
It
it?
was well told, but it was bizarre. You're talking about the first incarnation, right?
Yeah, like looks like it came out around like in 2009, so like 6 years ago.
That one I wasn't too crazy about, but it was just because of what they were doing with it. It wasn't that it was a badly told or anything.
Yeah, it looks like it only ran 12 issues
Yeah, and I
altogether.
actually read all 12, and it goes to show I didn't read the annuals. There were some annuals that accompanied it. Yeah, I dig him, and but what I really dig him as is a Batman writer, because I feel that he, when he writes the characters like Barbara or Batman or Bane or Leslie or any of them, that he gets the characters. Like he's a reader himself, if that makes any sense. It's not like he's just jumping into a storyline and taking like little pieces. He's taking history, and I like when writers do that, is they build upon everything that was built before. And I just love that. Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, it could connect to it looks like he's done a lot of what they call ultimate guides to DC characters that are published by DK Publishing.
Yep,
I
he
think
sure
I've
has. I'm glad you brought it up that he did that, because that's what I like about him. I feel like he's an historian
Yeah,
of
it looks like
comics.
he has to do a lot of research for those, and he's done a Batman one and Catwoman and
And that's why it
Weather.
feels like you just read those books that he's doing here, and it just feels like you feel like you're at home. Like this is the shit. He like knows it. He's drawing upon the past to write his current story, and he does it so damn well.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yes, yeah, this week was a really good batch of retro books. Like I was so pleased with all three of them.
That's cool. Other than that, you've pretty much been reading a lot of Convergence, it looks like.
Yeah, a lot of Convergence. I've been kept up on the new Spider-Man titles and Star Wars for the most part. I'm enjoying those from Marvel. I like that new Star Wars that Kanan, and I didn't think I would because I didn't like the cartoon that much. That was really good. But so yeah, I'm digging everything I'm reading actually. There's
Yeah, I
nothing I
haven't.
read that was bad lately.
That's cool. Yeah, I've been reading a lot of. I'll read a few of those Silver Age Marvels, and I've been reading some. Well, not current Marvel, like maybe 10 months old Marvel, because Marvel Unlimited is 6 months behind, but I'm even more behind on top of that.
Yeah, you're going back to the 60s.
Well, yeah, that. But in addition to that, I've been reading stuff from like 10 months ago or so, which can be kind of funny sometimes, jumping back and forth. But another thing I've been reading that's, I think, not old enough, is other than to mention at the end here, is I subscribe to, I tried out this subscription called Scribd.
Yeah, I heard about that. I tried to sign up for it, but yeah, I'd enter your credit card number and I backed out.
I tried it out, and I've actually been paying for it for a couple of months, because in addition to the comics that are on there, I probably wouldn't have subscribed to it if it weren't for the comics. But in addition to the comics, I've also been using a little bit of their audiobooks as well, and a few, like, they have novels and stuff on there. But anyways, it depends on the company how much stuff's on there. IDW has a ton of stuff on there, but I've been reading. Dynamite has a handful of stuff too, and they have all the volumes of The Boys.
Yeah.
So I've been reading those like a trade or two a week. I've been digging it pretty much. It's been pretty good. I haven't read a lot of Garth Ennis in a long time. I read Preacher a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of taken me back to that a little bit, but it's been a while since I read a lot of Garth Ennis.
Yeah, I dig Garth Ennis for the most part. He's doing war stories now for Avatar, and I think he's gonna do Section 8 for the new DC launch, which is this Hitman thing. So
Yeah, that's cool.
looking forward to that because that's an oddball characters. The dog welder. Welds dogs to people. It just seems so stupid. But.
Yeah, you said something somewhere. I lose track of where I heard you say what, but it was probably DC noise. But just the whole the thing that happens with solicitations, where you have we know what's coming in July
Yeah.
or June, is it? Whichever, post convergence, and so it does take a little bit of this the bite out of the whole, fighting for their lives, like fighting for their right to exist, and
Although we don't know the state of the characters coming out of Convergence.
that's true. And Darrow was saying something to that effect, and that is true. But I it would be fun, and I understand why it can't be this way, but it would be fun if it was a total mystery.
Yeah, you didn't know.
Yeah, because then I feel like you'd even really be just turning the pages with
Yeah, because
anticipation,
you
you know?
don't know what world is going to live. What they do really do cater to is people like me. Like Convergence is written for me because it goes under the banter that everything matters, and I truly believe I still believe that it does, and it links all that stuff together, including things that you thought were on the side, like Injustice, Gods Among Us. You think that's like a video game property. It's in this book. Elseworlds are colliding in these books. Like I went and bought Justice Riders recently because they appeared in one of the story arcs, and I absolutely loved it. It was the Nightwing Oracle one, and I'm like, I want to know more about these guys. They're awesome. And I recently received Justice Riders by Chuck Dixon and J.H. Williams III. I mean, that's a creative team right there, doing an Elseworlds title. So it's getting me to buy some stuff that I haven't explored. And I'll be honest with you, I've skipped a lot of the Elseworlds. I mean, I've read like Gotham by Gaslight and Red Rain and a lot of the stuff, but I skip a lot of it because a lot of the times, my mentality at the time that they were coming out was, this isn't in continuity. It's a story that's gonna just be there, and it doesn't matter. Well, in this Convergence, it does matter, and there's all these different alternate realities that are hitting. And yeah, they're just skimming the surface. I mean, I would have loved if they would have made this a year-long event. Nobody else would, but I would personally, because it's so big. And as an historian of DC Comics, I consider myself kind of an historian. I know a lot, and I've never stopped. I've never stopped. So all this stuff is familiar to me.
So, and you're
And
always learning more.
yeah, and I'm always learning more, and I want to know more. And I'm absorbing this stuff like a sponge, and it's making me feel like, oh, the 90s, oh, those were great times. Oh, the 80s, oh, pre-Flashpoint was brilliant. I love it, and I never, I don't know. I'm different than your typical fan, I think. I think to some people they might not like Convergence because I really believe it caters to the DC fan, which is opposite of the New 52. You know.
Which this episode is actually episode number 52, coincidentally.
52. How about that? The worlds are aligning.
This is the old 52.
I wonder what I'm doing on a multiverse, on another multiverse. I wonder if there's a Bizarro me that hates comics. He's like everything that I hate as comic fans. He's on the internet right now bitching about the Batman versus Superman trailer.
Yeah, he's just like making fun of people that like superheroes.
Yeah.
I would love to meet an alternate reality version of myself.
I would hate it because I'd want to
I think it'd
strangle
be so fascinating.
them.
I don't. Did you watch Fringe?
No,
Did
I
you
did
watch that
not.
show?
No.
That was a big plot line for a couple seasons where there were two realities. So you had a lot of the actors on the show playing two versions of themselves, and they end up working together, so a lot of them meet face to face and stuff, and I was always jealous when watching that show, just how interesting it would be to meet an alternate reality version of myself.
Yeah. And I did get to go to a Retro 40s show. So, hey,
Oh yeah,
that
right.
was pretty awesome, man. I had a
But a
good time.
concert, right?
That's my music. You've known for a while now that I've been getting into 40s stuff. And Barb found this concert that was happening. And yeah, we were probably some of the youngest people there. There might have been another couple of people, but it was awesome. I can't tell you how awesome it was. It did like pre-war songs, and then it went to, like during the war, post-war stuff, and they had all the military stand up, all the veterans. It was just fucking amazing. I mean,
That's cool.
I absolutely loved it. They had a segment with the Andrews sisters, who I think are the shit. Like I love the I could listen to the Andrews sisters all day. There's something about 40s music that has like a calming effect for me. So like when I'm working at the terminal and I have to think a lot, it helps me than listening to modern music, if that makes any sense.
It does. Yeah, certain types of music I think are
It's
more
like some kind of relaxing,
conducive.
calming effect under a stressful situation.
Yeah, a lot of people use classical music that way. Like if there's they wants don't want silence, but they're working on something that's really takes a lot of attention. They find that classical music helps support their thought processes and stuff.
And some people like no sound. They like total quiet, you know.
Right.
I think I was in a panel with Gail Simone one time, and she was saying that she likes it like just pure quiet.
Yeah. But yeah, that's cool. I'm sure Keith would have went with you if he lived there.
Oh yeah, Keith would have been there. I guarantee it. My brother would have been there, and he would have enjoyed it. Daryl would have been screaming.
It doesn't sound like Daryl's thing now.
That takes us to the end of episode 52.
Yes, and there are 52 other retrocasts on 52 other Earths, where 52 other Mike and Chris's are
Recording.
concluding their episodes.
The other podcast is about the future. They're not retro. They're like
Yeah.
talking about what could happen.
And then there's that one where both of us are dressed up like Dr. Savannah.
That's right.
Because he's everywhere,
Mad
apparently.
scientist. They really like that guy in Multiversity.
That's what made me think of him in connection with alternate universes. That's because I think Morrison really likes Captain Marvel.
Morrison is also a historian of comics, and you can
Yeah.
see that in there. The only thing that's different with Morrison, like we were pointing out Beatty, you know, is he likes to get metaphysical and stuff with his stuff,
Yeah.
which makes it strange. And he also likes to throw in stuff that you really, 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 really have to pay attention to if you're gonna get it.
That's what makes a difference for me with him, though, compared to some writers like him, is that ultimately I can feel in his writing that he loves the characters, even though he's like messing around and playing with them. You know, I feel that love that he has.
He loves the Golden Age and Silver Age of comics, you can tell.
Yeah, especially, yeah. Especially those.
So yeah, I appreciate him. I don't always like his work. I like most of it.
Yeah.
And I think he's a guy that's passionate about the properties. I really do.
I do too.
And comics history is awesome. Like that's why I love DC so much. That's 'cause that's where I know. Like I'm nowhere near the knowledge base of Marvel as I am DC.
Yeah, that's why in the last couple episodes of From Kid to Flash, I've been doing little biographies of creators because it's so fascinating, especially from that era, to learn about these creators and their lives. I've done so far. I've done Carmine Infantino, Nick Carty, and Bob Haney, and their lives are just so fascinating, especially the ones that served. Ended up serving in World War II, and just learning these things about them. But I should send you the link to this Bob Haney interview that I used as a source, because he's a really funny interview. Lots of good information, but he's also cracking me up because he's not afraid to he's not afraid to mince his words about how he felt about other people and stuff. He's pretty funny.
The thing I love about 40s too and 50s is people's work ethic is so different. They were really dedicated to what they were doing. I really feel that they were. Like their work was just as important to them as their families and stuff. I don't so much see that anymore.
A lot of things have changed.
I'll be the last one to leave at work. I see people come and go, and it's like, we got this shit. We got to figure it out. And it's just the mentalities have changed, man. I just. But that's not retro. So let's end this one. So where can they reach you, Chris?
Well, they can reach me on the Twitter at MythMakingETC, and that's where you are, Mike Myers Brunch. They can email us, mythmakingetc@gmail.com, mike@comicbooknoise. And we have a Facebook page that we share with Geek Brunch Current, or Geek Brunch OG. We would appreciate iTunes reviews. You can review
Yes.
both shows at the same time, or just review Retro and make fun of Bill
It's becoming really popular to do that.
to make fun of Bill.
The donut thing is outrageous.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm
I'll
on.
just get random texts from Daryl or somebody, and he's like, "Look at this fucker," and he takes a picture of a donut and it's cut in fourths or something like that.
That's okay. I got Bill's back. I'm a Bill supporter, and I'm completely fine with him rationing his sweets.
Do you eat fish? I can't remember. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a fish hater too. That's what I call him.
A fish hater?
Yeah, 'cause
Oh,
you
'cause
kill them. You'll eat them.
I'm willing to kill fish, just not
Yeah.
a yeah. Death to the fishies.
You never seen Little Nemo, I guess.
Yeah, it made me hungry. I'm okay with the half a donut. I'll eat the other half. I'll eat the other half. And did I forget anything?
I
I
don't
don't
think
think
so.
so. Geekbrunchpodcast.com.
Yeah. Well, you have a good rest of your Sunday and
Thanks, you
probably
too.
get some lit dinner or lunch. Or are you going to
Yeah,
eat
I'm
dinner?
hungry. I'll eat both. Not at the same time, so I'll have lunch then dinner. It's 1 o'clock.
I'm getting hungry because it's 11. It's almost 11:30 here.
It's almost 1:30 here, so I'm overdue for lunch. That's usually what I do right after the show is go eat something.
Well, thanks, my friend, and
Yes,
see you
same to
in
you.
2 weeks.
All right, sounds
But
good.
and
Have a
I'm
good
gonna
day.
try my damnedest to remember to send you these things today.
Oh, no
I have
rush.
Power Girl and whatever the other. Oh, did you say you needed Hal Jordan, right?
Yeah, it was those two
Yeah,
you said, yeah, that you had doubles. I
have a lot
appreciate
of
it.
Harlequins, man.
No
I think
rush.
I have four Harlequins.
Damn. They must know about your dog or something.
Yeah, must. The other thing I've gotten into is these damn Scribblenauts. I love
Oh
them.
yeah, I saw you said a lot of those. You
Oh
know
my
what? I have
God.
you seen I just take a picture of them for you. They're not as great as the other ones, but I found at Target they have these things called chibis.
I haven't
And they're
heard of
like
these ones.
they have like they're super small and they're kind of cheap, but it's like only $4 for a pack and you get three of them. But where they have them is you know how Target, at least every Target I've been has been in the same is the same basically, but they have that row right by the registers of all the baseball cards and stuff.
Yeah.
They've been there, and a couple targets I've been
But
in.
what are they? Are they little figures or
They're
what?
DC, yeah, they're just little tiny figures. They're like
I'm gonna have to check that
an
out
inch
because
high or something.
we are going to Target today. The other ones that I like, that I absolutely love, I only have three of them right now. But the mystery vinyls for the sci-fi,
Oh yeah, I saw
they
that
are
they had those.
badass. I got Spock, and I got the Lost in Space robot, and an alien so far.
Nice.
I'm addicted to those. I kind of wish I wouldn't have got into them, but
Nice.
the Scribblenauts, I'm right now bidding on two exclusive GameStop ones that are eluding me.
Oh,
Hal
damn.
Jordan, Green Lantern, and classic Batman, which is my favorite Batman suit, the yellow, the gray, and the blue. I just love that one. I love that costume. Not the Golden Age suit, but the more like the Bronze Age.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
You're all in.
I never thought about what an interesting concept the mystery vinyls are, because there's something to know about not knowing what you're getting that excites me. It's almost like opening up a gift at Christmas and you don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it does create that little rush that you get.
Yeah.
And then it's either like you're like, oh
Oh,
man,
damn, I got some socks.
yeah, oh damn, another Harley Quinn, but that's just still kind of better than socks.
Yeah, I dig it. We'll talk to you soon and enjoy your lunch.
All right,
Take care,
yep,
my
you
friend.
too.
Bye.
Bye bye.